he's doing his thing, but he doesn't want to be the easy cream.
All right. Welcome back, everybody.
Hey.
How are you doing, guys?
Everybody feeling better?
For the most part.
Feeling great.
That's good. That's good. Well, let's go ahead and get started. I think the first thing we've got is some follow-up on Luna. Adam, you had something there?
Yeah, I actually picked up the Luna controller and was given that a shot. One thing is I can't say it's a full review on it because I don't have a mobile device that's currently compatible with it. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to test it on the phone itself. But on the PC, going through and doing some of the Ubisoft games, it seemed like it was pretty much right on par.
Yeah, and so it wasn't compatible with your phone because it's too old. What do you have, like a Samsung S8? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's one of the older ones.
How? I mean, that's not too old, is it? How old is that? How many years old is that?
I want to say it's maybe 3 or 4 generations back. I'm not 100% sure, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, so is it the software, the streaming software, the Luna software doesn't work on your device? It's not that the remote itself.
Correct. Yeah, it just doesn't support that device.
Gotcha. Yeah, you actually let me play with it a little bit. And it feels pretty good, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the overall controller itself is pretty close to the Switch Pro controller. I liked how the handles themselves had a little bit better curvature. I have bigger hands, so I mean, it felt pretty nice. But the response time latency was pretty much on point. It was good.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. There was a noticeable difference between the latency of playing with the Luna controller and just playing with playing with like the Kishi or something like that. Because it has that direct Wi-Fi connection, I guess they're doing some kind of magic. I really don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing some kind of magic that reduces the latency where it feels like you're actually playing on, you know, natively, or locally. The one thing I will say, I mean, it's not really a review of the Luna controller itself, but of the service, is we were playing what on your 27 inch monitor. Is that what says it is?
You know, I think I have a 32, but yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, a good size computer monitor. And you could definitely see, like, compression artifacts in it, where I couldn't see them on my phone. So I think the service seems like it's better on smaller devices as far as the visual fidelity. But the controller is probably, if I was to have the Luna service, I would have to have the controller.
That's good to hear that the controller itself takes care of all that lag that I had experienced with the Xbox controller, because that was definitely like a deal breaker for me for keeping it. Was, yeah, I can't really play most of these games because of that. So I might look into getting the controller then, because I do like it on my iPad. The games look great. Ryan, I think you're right. I think that size or even smaller on a phone is probably pretty good for that kind of platform.
Yeah, maybe if you're nice to him, Adam will sell you the Luna controller that he bought, because you had some quibbles about the buttons, didn't you?
Yeah, that was the one weird thing about it, was the buttons itself were flat.
Interesting. Okay, that's weird.
Yeah, they weren't concaved, they weren't bubbled, they were just straight flat.
Yeah, it was really weird, because at first we thought they were like sweet tarts. Like, I thought they were concave and like bent in. But your normal buttons, like on we compared it with the Xbox controller and the Switch controller, and both of those have slightly different variations of like a convex certain surface where they're like bubbled out, but the Luna didn't. Yeah, it was flat. It still feels good, but it just feels different.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if I've ever had a controller that was flat, other than, I guess, on the SNES controller. Some of those are, I can't remember. I have one around here somewhere, but yeah, it's, I feel like most controllers are, you know, that convex, the bubbly type.
Yeah, even ones that you don't think are actually convex, so they still just have a slight like roundness to them that the Luna didn't. So
yeah, I think it's pretty average to have a bubbled out button set. And that's one of the things that does feel weird, is going from the Xbox controllers that's, you know, definitely bubbled. It feels weird to have a flat set. Now, I've not played on it much to know whether or not that really bothers me, but we'll see whenever I actually get something that works with it properly.
No, that's good. I have to check that out too.
Yeah, so still talking about, I guess, streaming games. Have you all used the Steam Remote Play feature?
I have not.
So what that is, you know, if you've got a friend, well, here's a good example. This last week, I was playing with two of my friends, and we were going to play golf with friends. I thought that they had the game, and they didn't. And so that game actually supports the Remote Play feature from Steam. And so what we did is, I hosted the game, and then I sent them invites, and they were able to join and basically stream the game to their computers through Steam and play like a local player match, basically. And so when it was somebody else's turn, I would just take my hands off the keyboard and mouse, and they would put theirs on theirs, and then they could control the screen. It works really well, actually, especially for games that aren't like real twitchy, or like, you know, a fighting game. I wouldn't want to play on that. But for slower paced games like Golf with Friends or Golf with Your Friends, it actually worked really good. And I thought that it was limited to only sharing with one other person, but I believe you can actually share, like do the Steam Remote Play together with up to four people, which is really nice, because then they got to try out the game and they liked it. So they're probably going to pick it up, because, you know, it's still better to have it, but, it works really well. So anyway, Steam actually expanded that feature recently, and via Rock, Paper, Shotgun, they allow you to do Steam Remote Play together, but now your friends don't need to have Steam. So the way that it works is, say we're going to play like Jackbox Party Pack, and, you know, you didn't have Steam. Everybody's doing this during the pandemic. I can send you an invite, and it will send you a link to your phone. It works on iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, everything. Actually, I want to say Raspberry Pi too, but maybe I just made that up.
Yeah, it does. It supports it.
Yeah, okay. So that's crazy. And what it allows you to do is, it'll prompt the other person to install the Steam Link app, which is basically Steam's like local, you can stream games from your own computer on your local network. Well, it prompts them to download that app, and then they can play, they can do the remote play on their device without having to have Steam installed. So I thought that was pretty cool expansion of the functionality. The only thing about it is it's limited. That specific functionality of playing without Steam is limited to only one other player. So if you had multiple people, at least one of them is going to have Steam, where the other one can just play via the Steam Link app.
So is this limited to like turn-based games currently, or is it like pretty much any game?
No. Any game that supports the feature can do it. So they just have to support that feature via Steam itself, and then you could play it. Like if you wanted to play like an RTS or something like that, I mean, you could. I'm not sure how it, I don't think it would work great because I think turn-based games, at least in my experience, the only games I've played with it are turn-based games because they take over the controls of the computer at that point.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering is if that's how they're doing the sharing piece and so that it would be limited to that. So be interested to see some other types of games.
Yeah, you have to kind of coordinate while you're playing too because you can move the mouse at any time you want. So like if you wanted to like mess with your friend, you could like start like shaking the mouse or hitting a button while it's their turn and probably make them mad. But
yeah, that's cool.
So, I mean, I've used remote play before, like the couch play, but I guess you're just saying the only difference is here is that the other person doesn't have to have Steam.
Yeah. Yeah. The expansion of the feature here is that they can play like on their tablet or on their phone and you can just send them the invite code or the URL. And then the URL directs them to whatever, you know, app store or web browser link to download the Steam Link app. And then they play via the Steam Link app. So you don't have to be on your computer to play, which is really cool. So you could have, you know, a gamepad hooked up to your phone or tablet. And, you know, we could play Worms, you know, if you didn't have Worms or something like that. I mean, you get any game, but it's pretty cool. I like how that they're expanding the functionality of this feature, especially with, you know, over this last year when we've had the pandemic going. It's been a nice feature. And, you know, it's not going to like prevent sales. If anything, it's going to promote sales because people get to try more games that they don't have.
Yeah, I see it kind of like board game nights, right? In the before times where, oh, hey, let's bring over a couple games that I own and, you know, we'll sit and play some board games. And this is kind of like the virtual iteration on that, which is neat.
Yep.
But in other Steam / Valve news, Ryan, you got some interesting stuff from a court case with Apple, and Valve involved in that.
Yeah. So, Epic and Apple started having a very public argument, over their Apple's App Store policies in last August. And so Apple takes 30% cut of all in-app purchases and Epic didn't like that. So what they decided to do was ship functionality in their game that they could stealthily turn on where they launched their own store that used, just took like regular credit cards in their iOS app, which you can't do. It has to go through the in-app purchase functionality. And so, of course, Apple just went ahead and removed Fortnite because it's a violation of their developer agreement. And you knew that this was already something that Epic had planned because as soon as Apple removed Fortnite, Epic had an animated short already produced and ready to go that they launched that made fun of Apple and painted them as like the big brother from Apple's. It was a parody of Apple's 1984 ad. And then they immediately filed a lawsuit. So, I mean, what you can see here is that Epic was trying to make Apple look like they were bad by taking down the game. And so that gave Epic the reason to file a lawsuit. Well, fast forward to February and both Apple and Epic in the lawsuit are in what is called the discovery phase. It's a pretrial procedure where each party can obtain evidence to build their case. So what's funny about this is that Apple, in trying to build their case that what they're doing is standard across the industry, subpoenaed Steam or subpoenaed Valve over their Steam sales data. And Steam was like, well, you know, we're not part of this lawsuit, so just leave us out of this. And the judge actually granted Apple's subpoena. And so in doing so, what Apple originally asked for was the total sales data of apps and in-app products, the price of each app on the platform, the gross revenues from every single version of every single app, and the price changes of every app between 2015 and today. And so they didn't get all that, but I think they did end up getting like the top 15 grossing applications. But it's just a funny thing to see that, you know, Apple was like, okay, you know, you want to do this, we're going to get sales data from Steam, which is, I would think, arguably the largest gaming distribution channel on computers. And in doing so, they get like a lot of competitive data on, you know, selling games and you know, revenue data from Valve. And, you know, Apple has their own subscription gaming service. So I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, kind of messed up considering they weren't part of the whole spill altogether and they're getting dragged in. I mean, I understand they're trying to build their case, but that does kind of suck for Steam.
Yeah, it definitely does suck for Steam. But, you know, because at first I was like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe they could ask for this. But apparently this is just standard procedure when you're in court, especially in these large cases, that you can, you know, subpoena this data. The judge, in response to Valve saying like these are just over the top, the judge sided with Apple but noted that Apple, quote, salted the earth with subpoenas and told Valve, don't worry, it's not just you.
I read that and just like I like sad laughed. I was like, oh, like, yeah, that sucks. But dude, they're doing it to everyone. Which I'm sure that's just their standard procedure, especially at Apple, right? It's such a large company where it's just subpoena people to death to where they can't, you know.
Yeah, well, I think the argument for, or one of the arguments for Epic is that it's just so unfair that Apple takes 30% and they're trying to basically say that Apple has like a monopoly and, you know, they can't do this. But the truth of the matter is that I believe Steam takes 30% as well. And I know a lot of the console systems do, console makers do as well in their stores. So Apple's argument is, hey, you know, we're just like another console. For me, the difficulty there is like, I don't really think of the iPhone as a console. I think of it as a computer, but I don't think that's how Apple sees the device. I think that they see it as a console that they control, and that's their main argument. So I think what it'll end up possibly coming down to is like what the definition of the phone is. Like, what is that device? It'll be some like, you know, archaic, real specific argument that'll end up deciding these kind of cases. Because Apple's getting attacked from a lot of different sides. Not in this case specifically, but all over different industries. Everybody smells blood in the water with Apple.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the mobile devices are being looked at more of like media sets anymore versus just communication.
Right, yeah. Like it's a console, not like a game console, but the definition of a console, which is, you know, just something, a device that has a specific purpose that you use it for. So like you just download the app. The app is played on the console, not, it's not a computer, because the whole device is, you know, restricted a lot more than a Mac is, or a PC for that matter. So they have an argument. I don't really buy it, but that's their argument.
Will be interesting to see where all that ends up going, especially over the year.
Yeah, I think this case and many others, like Apple has a lot of fights to fight over these next couple of years regarding the App Store. And I think if they don't do something, and they have, without getting into it, they've done some things proactively to make themselves look better and to be more fair about the store. Like, they have a small business program now for small developers that make under $1 million a year, and you can join that, and they only take 15%. But if they don't, like, head this off, I think it's really going to mess them up, especially if Congress or any other outside party dictates what they can and can't do with the store. Like, it could really change fundamentally what the iPhone is and the security implications of it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of antitrust stuff that I think is going to be coming soon. You know, you just look at Google, Facebook, like, just everybody is under that eye right now of the government, and you know, watchdogs looking at everything from acquisitions to privacy practices, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we could fill a whole episode just on, like, big tech antitrust lawsuits, and specifically even Apple. I mean, they're just getting lit up everywhere. But yeah. But yeah, back to away from the lawsuits, back to the fun. Adam, you've got some new Aliens game in here. The Aliens series hasn't really had good luck with video games. So yeah, tell us about this one.
Yeah, I guess the last two we had was the reboot, basically, of Alien versus Predator, and then followed up with Alien Colonial Marines, which that one was really bad. Alien versus Predator wasn't too bad, though. It was a decent little play. Wasn't amazing. And then you also had Predator, the Hunters Hunting. I can't remember.
That game was sad.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to that, considering someone who really enjoys Predator and Alien. But this one here, Alien Fireteam, does seem very promising. It is a three-player co-op survival game. And the way they break it down is the game is 100% multiplayer, from my understanding. And there's four different campaigns, and inside of the campaigns are different missions with various difficulties and such. They talk about there's like over 20 different types of aliens now. And the sounds and the music, it's all very authentic. It's pretty cool. The only thing that I'll say immediately off the top of my head is, from what I was reading, granted this could change over time, but I don't believe there's going to be cross play or cross progression.
Oh, that's just a big red X for you.
Yeah, I mean, accessibility, as I've said in the past, is everything. And we're kind of in that age now where, especially if you're doing co-op like this and you've got unlocks, level up, progressions, or even if you're purchasing DLC and stuff, it's just so much better to have that cross-play and cross-progression.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know if you just mentioned it or not. I may have missed it, but this game's actually a third-person game. And I think the developers said that they're kind of not necessarily going for, but I think they took a lot from like Left 4 Dead, in that it's kind of like you're getting overrun by all these aliens. I'm not sure where I'm at on this game yet. It looks like it could be kind of cool, but it doesn't spook me out like the Alien
Isolation.
Well, no, actually, I haven't played that yet. I know, because that one's supposed to be good. But no, it's the alien material. You know, it's kind of a spooky. Well, it was originally a horror movie, but then in Aliens, plural, the sequel, they kind of changed it into an action movie. But it's still got, you know, some thrill to it. And just watching some of the gameplay of this, it seemed like it was like, oh, I'm just gonna shoot in every direction and kill all the aliens. It didn't seem like it was intense enough for me, I guess. And I don't know if maybe not being third person and being a first person game would help that. But yeah, I'm still kind of on the fence here. I'm not sure how excited I am about this game.
That was one of the things, because I felt the same way when I was watching. The video we were watching, I think, was from IGN, and it's like a 25-minute playthrough with the developers. And I agree. It didn't seem like there was much at risk. Like, they were just kind of playing through it nonchalant. But they said multiple times through going through the campaign, they're like, hey, this is like default difficulty. This is without having like crazy amounts of damage from the acid blood, and there's no friendly fire. So they're like, whenever you take it up a notch, it's really where you want to be. And that builds the intensities, because you don't want to be close to the aliens. You want to keep a distance, and you don't want to accidentally shoot your friends. So it, I think they were just kind of showing off the mechanics versus how it could be intense.
I think friendly fire could be interesting.
Yeah, considering it's all closed spaces, you know, like there's not a whole lot of open room for everybody to be flopping all over the place.
Yeah, I liked the playthrough. I thought stylistically, it felt like a arcade style, like Time Cop or that kind of thing. Remember those, like the way that the zooming in when you're focusing on a target and that kind of stuff. So I'm wondering if similarly, let's say this is in like an arcade application with, you know, a lot more intensity going on, if it would be, you know, a better, like, faster paced, more intense gameplay too.
Yeah. And I think the only other thing I noticed in the preview that I didn't care for was that it highlighted the aliens with like a yellow. So like you could see them. I mean, I understand they want you to visibly be able to detect the aliens versus the black against dark colors, but I would almost rather have been like almost hard to see them in some areas to make it a little bit more difficult versus like, oh, I'm looking that direction, I'm aiming, there's a silhouette around them.
Did they say whether or not that was something you could turn off? I would hope that would be something that you could turn off. Because if you, I mean, that's the whole point, right? Like, aliens are sneaky and they blend into the scenery. And if it's so hard to see them that you have to like highlight them in yellow, I think that's a problem with your game, like problem with the art direction, you know, and not necessarily something that needs to be solved with a highlighter.
Yeah, they didn't mention whether or not that came off or not as you went up in difficulties, but I can say just clearly seeing that, I didn't like that, because I agree. I would rather them be a surprise of like, oh, I didn't notice they were creeping up on me, because they blend in.
Yeah, that's the thrilling part that I was talking about. Like, to be honest, I didn't watch this entire video. I watched maybe a couple minutes of it in the beginning. So I don't know if it changed or not, but like, it looked like the aliens were just like, oh, they're all coming from the front direction. Like, I want them to come down from the ceiling directly above me and I don't see it. Or like, you know, get at somebody through the grates in the floor, like all kinds of like, you know, stuff you would see in the movie.
So they do start coming out of the ceiling. I didn't see any come so much out of the ground. However, what you seen in the beginning of that video was mainly the runners. You know, they were just swarming. But the drone and stuff shows up later in that video. And that one was very intense. He showed up, he'd pick you up by the neck, throw you on the ground, start mauling at you. And then he would run away and get into a vent, and he'd come back and stalk you later.
So he would just kind of like slap you around a little bit and then let you go?
If you did enough damage to him, he wouldn't let himself die, basically. He would get away.
Oh, okay. I thought he'd just like beat you up a little bit. It's like, oh, I'll come back later. I was like, that's a lame alien.
No, it's definitely like he's doing his thing, but he doesn't want to be the easy cream. So get the hell out.
So did they have a release date for this game?
They didn't have a date. They just said summer.
Oh, wow. So this summer. So that's pretty soon.
Yeah. I mean, I could only imagine with them doing, I know they said it was 4 campaigns, but it was like 3 missions, I think, per each campaign. But it's still.
Oh, so that's pretty short.
Yeah, it still seemed kind of light in my opinion. But then again, whenever you watch that video, that entire time they were going through one of those campaigns.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it has, you know, hopefully it's good. And hopefully it has like good replay value, because this would be a super fun game for us to play. I mean, any kind of co-op game is, I'm always down for. So, yeah.
I mean, I would have bought Predator if you guys played it, to be honest, even though it wasn't the greatest, I still would have played it. So I will most likely buy this one for sure.
Well, the thing with Predator was, like, there nobody played it, I think is what it was, right?
Yeah, there was a little bit of the mix on it. I was on the edge of getting ready to purchase it, and I remember playing the beta, and the beta was kind of up and down. If you wanted to play as the Predator, you had a really long queue. But if you wanted to play as human, you were in.
Yeah, that's what it was. And yeah, that was okay. Now I'm remembering now. Yeah, the queues for the Predator were forever. And then the Predator was the only mode type that was fun. Like when I was playing, when we tried to play as like the soldiers, it was like, okay, this is really boring.
Yeah.
And the Predator had like all kinds of cool equipment and different things they could do. And I don't know. And then if I recall, like the Predator started to get like super OP as it leveled up, it unlocked like a bunch of different items that, they would just like destroy all the humans. But
see,
yeah, we played it for that beta weekend or whatever.
I want to see them do a game where you play as a squad of two or four predators and you're hunting between humans and aliens and other things of that nature. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, you could have your like predator dogs and you run from the super predator. I like that movie.
What?
The Predators movie.
Oh, okay. You're talking about Predators. Yeah, okay. I thought you were talking about the new one. I was going to say no. The Pred dog in that one was really stupid looking. I really hated that.
Wait, what? What new one? What are you talking about? The one where they had like the Uber Predator that came back to kill the Predator?
Yeah, and it was just really a terrible movie, unfortunately.
Oh, you didn't like that one? I thought it was pretty funny. It was like 80s campy.
Oh, man.
It's perfect.
I think it really ruined it whenever the dog showed up and they had dreadlocks and they were like circling them around in the on the football field. And yet there was absolutely no danger at all. It was just such a corny movie, unfortunately. As much as I love Predator, I was very upset.
Yeah, we're rambling on now. But did you ever see the original costume for Predator?
Oh, yeah, man.
It's like a big like bug creature.
Did you ever see the original concept of the queen alien? Wireframes and garbage bags.
Wire? What? Like just wire with garbage bags over it?
Yeah, they were trying to shape her out with garbage bags and things like that. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so hopefully we'd see some more of this game before it comes out. And yeah, maybe we'll touch base on it when it's released. But something I'm definitely excited about is the new Ninja Turtles game. Adam, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so it's titled Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. And this one looks like a very good tribute to the classic Turtles. However, it looks like one of the ones, I can't think of the title, that was on the Game Boy Advance is more of what the art style looks like of the Turtles themselves. But it looks like the music, everything else, they're going in. They got, I believe it's Mike Patton is doing the music again.
Yeah, it's basically like a nostalgia trip for the old beat-em-up Turtles games. Turtles in Time. What were the other ones? I always forget the titles.
I mean, it's Ninja Turtles, just straight out. And then there's Ninja Turtle Manhattan Project. That was my favorite one. Yeah, this is definitely a flashback to that, and I'm really excited about that. I think as long as it's on all of the platforms, especially like the Switch or the Xbox, that's going to be a great like couch play.
I think it should be. They didn't say specifically in this teaser trailer, but they did say consoles and PC. So
yeah, you can add it to your wish list already on Steam.
Nice,
cool. Do they have a price?
No, and it just says coming soon, no date.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have... Do we have any more information besides this little teaser trailer? Like online co-op, like, you know, anything like that?
No, no data outside of the box on that, other than it looks like it's doing the traditional of, hey, start off here, end up with a Technodrome. Looks like the Triceratops clan from Dimension X, trying to think of their name right now. It looks like a lot of the old classic stuff's there. They're going to pay tribute to just about everything.
Yeah, the beginning of this teaser trailer was really cool because it was basically the intro to the 80s or the 90s cartoon. For the most part, it had the same music, more or less. They had a couple things like changed, but yeah, it was awesome.
It was updated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still like, I'm a little up and down on the design of the turtles themselves, but I think it's going to look good. I mean, my thing is going to be what Shredder looks like.
Yeah. The only thing that I wasn't like super in love with is it was almost intentionally pixelated. Like this, the health bars and status bars at the top of the screen were almost, they were like askew, and you could tell like they were like, you know, very aliased pixel art, where it didn't have to be that aliased. It was almost like kind of difficult to see, like to read what was going on in there. But
yeah, I've noticed like some games get this really, they do a really good job with like the old school 8-bit feel. And yeah, you're right. I think some aspects of what we've seen look great, like the turtles, the actual characters. But yeah, some of those like menus and some of the world stuff, like it's almost like they tried too hard to make it look old, and it's not coming across. Again, it could change. But I did find there's a press kit, which doesn't have too much more information. We'll link to it in the show notes and everything. But yeah, there's like the essentially even the like main website is just here's the video and come join us on Discord and a couple other things. So very, very hidden, a lot of this info.
Yeah, and we didn't say, but this game is done by .emu. Or .emu, emu, emulator, who did Streets of Rage 4.
And that was a good,
so
good game.
Yeah, they know their beat-em-ups. Yeah. And Adam, they actually did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Game Boy Advance. So is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah, that's got to be it, because it does look kind of similar to that.
Yeah. And they don't say, just says up to 4 players simultaneous, but they don't say whether or not there'll be any like online play, which I mean, I would hope so, but you never know sometimes.
Well, they pulled it off.
I'll just leave that out.
With, what did you say, Streets of Rage?
Streets of Rage 4?
Yeah.
Did that have online co-op?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we could safely assume that this would too.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet they're going to go that route. I mean, it's a pretty iconic game, and I think a lot of these anymore, that's kind of the standards. Make sure there's multiplayer so it doesn't get turned and burned.
Yeah. Well, cool, yeah. Excited about this game. So I think our main topic is going to be WandaVision, because that wrapped up last week. No, 2 weeks ago. Right? Yeah.
No, last week.
Yes. Last week.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. All right, yeah. So, yeah, WandaVision, because that wrapped up last week. So if you haven't seen WandaVision, we are going to spoil parts of it, most likely. So just go ahead and skip to the next chapter if you don't want to be spoiled. So just want to put that out there. Yeah, so WandaVision, what'd you guys think?
Yeah, I think overall great show. I think the story was great. I thought it was a lot of fun and action packed, and didn't know where it was going to go most of the time, right? Like especially the very first few episodes, I thought that was cool, but also kind of annoying because. Sometimes I'm like, what the heck is happening? Okay. And I'm very like new to to Wanda's storyline. And so I was like, I have no idea what is happening here. But other than that, like, I thought it was great.
Yeah, I would have to second that. I'll admit that I had no interest in watching anything new from the MCU after Endgame because I loved the Endgame. I loved everything that happened up to the final step, and I thought that was just, hey, let's just leave it. So, and especially whenever I seen the promo trailer, because I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the oldies, so I didn't think it was going to hit home for me. But after watching it and going through it, I think it was like the third episode, I was hooked. I was like, okay, this is for me. I just needed to warm up to it and be a little bit open-minded. Knowing a little bit of the backstories with Scarlet Witch, I was kind of anticipating different things. But overall, I think the biggest thing to take away from it was really cool to see. It was good to see Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany have their time to shine, because I'll admit, like, Paul Bettany as the Vision, I wasn't like overly stacked about the Vision. I like Paul Bettany, but I wasn't really like over the top with this character. But then after this, I was like, wow, I really like the Vision. I really like his character.
Yeah. Without getting too far ahead of myself, they really, I mean, just from what I remember of the movies, and my memory is not great, but they fleshed his character out like a lot in WandaVision. And so it made you like, I was like reflecting back upon Endgame thinking like, oh man, like that sucks he died, because he's a really good character. Like, I really, really like Vision now. And yeah, like you said, like, I'm like, who's this person I've never heard of? Because I don't follow Marvel comics. I don't know the backstories of a lot of the Marvel universe like I do DC. And we get into DC versus Marvel another day, but especially movies. But yeah, my first impressions of this, when I saw the trailer for it, I was like, what are they doing? Like, what, this is like supposed to be like Dick Van Dyke type Leave It to Beaver show, but it's MCU. Like, I don't know about this. And then the first episode, like, each episode has its own style or theme where it is supposed to portray a particular like sitcom era. So the first one was like Dick Van Dyke. Every single one of them, I picked up exactly what it was. First one was Dick Van Dyke. Then it was Bewitched. Then it was Brady Bunch. I don't think I have anything for episode 4, so I can't remember what that is. But yeah, then it was like Family Matters, Full House. And then it was like Malcolm in the Middle, like, and then Modern Family. Like, every single episode went through the progression of like sitcoms from the 50s, 60s, all the way up through today. And I loved that, because I've seen like basically every generation of sitcoms. I used to watch Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore on Nick at Night with my dad. Like, those were like, that was a big thing for me. So that was like my favorite part of this, was seeing them implement those styles like to perfection. So I thought that was really cool. But as far as the story, like, it was really good, but I think, and this is my own opinion, but, and yours might be different, but I think like, if you weren't invested in the Marvel, like, cinematic universe and like the stories, you'd be like, okay, like, it wasn't that like gripping of a story. Like, at first you didn't know what was going on, right? Because it's Wanda's projection. But I figured that out like pretty early on before they revealed it. I think I figured it out in the second episode. But if you are invested in the MCU, this was really good, because it like you said, it grows Vision's character. It grows Wanda's character, maybe not as much as Vision's. But it was still like a fun story that kind of sets up the rest of like the next story arc that they're going to do in the MCU.
I think that was the thing, is that Elizabeth Olsen's character had, you know, a backstory that had some emotion around her family, all the things that happened there with Ultron, and then the traumatic things that happened in Civil War. Like, she had a little bit of a development versus the Vision was like, well, I mean, he's kind of a robot cyborg wanting a little bit of humanity.
Yeah, he's Jarvis in a body, basically.
Yeah, so there really wasn't a whole lot to attach on, other than you could tell he just really enjoyed the company of Wanda. So it was neat to see him flesh out in this. But I think that was one of the things that was a little bit different was, in the movies, he was still stiff. He was still very robotic versus this show. It was like instant, here's his humanity.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was intentional or not, but
I think so. Because, I mean, like we said, like, they kind of developed his backstory, even though he doesn't have a backstory, where the backstory kind of makes you get attached to a character, or like, you know, gives you insider appreciation into them. And that's what I think this did for Vision.
Going back to like the Wanda's story, I think seeing, so at first I didn't like the direction it was going with the Dick Van Dyke style. I was like, oh, okay, like, is this just a gimmick? It wasn't until they really revealed why that I was like, okay, like, that's really deep. And like, that emotional pain that she's dealing with that created this whole entire, like, basically world that she was, you know, commanding because of, like, out of this trauma. To me, like, that added that, like, human element to her that's really deep and very, very interesting, and made, like, me more interested in her character than, you know, pretty much I ever was, because I was just like, ah, whatever. Like, I'd only seen her in and out of the movies and stuff. But to me now, looking at that, I'm like, yeah, like, I want to explore her character more, and I can't wait to see, you know, what else they bring out from that. And I think even, I think that's what crosses the, like, you don't have to be as invested in the universe because it kind of stands alone, like, these character developments. Like, it would be a very good, just like, series, you know, like, on its own, because of the stories that it told, like the story that it told about these two people and then the lives around them. I think it, like, if it didn't have all of the crazy, huge, intertwined Marvel universe, it would still just, you know, be a really good story of like suffering and pain and the stuff that comes from that.
But I think that's some of the gravity of it, is that she's already had to say goodbye to Vision twice, basically, in a very short time.
Yes, that adds to it, and for sure.
Seeing, knowing what it was like, episode seven or eight, is like, well, you know that the end result of this is he's going to have to go bye-bye, and so are the kids. So this is another huge traumatic situation. Like, it's not going to end happy.
Exactly. And I think, and that's like that theme throughout her life, right? Is just like living in a war-torn country and watching that happen to your family. And then out of that, like, discovering this about you. And it's just, yeah, it's really neat because, you know, again, I did not know her backstory. And then seeing it played out in this way was really, really good.
Yeah. Are you all, like, familiar with the comic Irredeemable?
No.
I think you've told me about this before.
So, yeah, Irredeemable is a comic. I believe it's by Mark Waid. It's a series, and I didn't finish it. But the premise of it is, what if a Superman-like character snapped? Like, what would happen? And without getting, you know, too many spoilers, like, it's bad. If somebody with Superman like powers that was a superhero loses their mind and goes ballistic, and that, I kind of got that vibe from Wanda in this, in that, like you said, Ryan, she's so emotionally damaged from all the terrible things that have happened to her in her life that, like, this is how she's coping with it, and it's not necessarily healthy. And yeah, so I thought that was really interesting, because I don't, like you said, I really don't know the Scarlet Witch's like full backstory or anything like that. I know what's been shown to me in the MCU, but I don't know like her comic origins. So I don't know what they're, you know, coming up with that's new versus what is like source material and things like that. But yeah, I was kind of like, oh dude, like, I don't know. Is like, does the Scarlet Witch turn evil? Like what is, I don't know what's happening. And that kind of like segues a little bit into maybe, if you all want to go ahead and do this, like what our predictions are for like, what is going to happen? Because so the Agnes character, Agnes Harkness, I believe is her name. I love that actress. She's a fantastic actress.
Oh yeah.
I can't recall her name, but,
it's Agatha Harkness. Agatha.
Is it Agatha?
Yeah, and it's Catherine Hahn.
No, I think it's Agnes, isn't it?
Well, like the character's name is right, but her fake name inside of Wanda's world is Agnes.
Oh, okay. I kept going back and forth in my notes. I'm like, oh, I just forgot what her name is. So she switches between Agatha and Agnes. It's Agnes is her real name, right?
Agnes is the fake one inside of Wanda's world.
Oh, okay. Agatha Harkness is the actual person's name.
Correct.
Okay.
That's the witch.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, yeah, towards the end of the show, they start to like, she kind of teaches us and Wanda about like the prophecy of the Scarlet Witch and all these things like that. And the Darkhold and the Book of the Damned and all this stuff. And like Wanda got like really kind of messed up during, you know, this show, this run. And so I'm wondering if in, you know, some of these like future MCU movies, we're going to see her, like basically turn evil maybe for a little bit or something like that. Cause I know she's supposed to be in the Doctor Strange movie, right? And so is Doctor Strange going to have to fight her because she's all messed up? I wonder.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I'm already thinking that way too, where it's going to be like this internal fight of hers, right? Where she's like bouncing back and forth between like her two sides almost.
Yeah, it'd be interesting too, because Doctor Strange's character is, you know, standalone. He's by himself. He doesn't, you know, he helps out the Avengers, but ultimately he's got his own duties and that's what matters most. Everything else is secondary. So if she is a threat, you know, he'll deal with it.
Yeah. And this is the first time I think we've actually seen her like, quote unquote, become the Scarlet Witch with her, like her traditional like headdress and all that stuff. And then something else that I caught on was that Agatha said that she was stronger than Doctor Strange. She used his other name or his other like thing that he goes by. What do they call him?
Stephen Strange is his name, but like
No, not his actual name.
Was it the Sorcerer Supreme?
Yes, the Sorcerer Supreme.
Did they call out that she was stronger than him? I know they basically said that.
Yeah, Agatha did. When I think they were, is either, yeah, it was in episode 9. So the final episode, she just like, when she's talking about the Darkhold and the Book of the Damned, she just like kind of nonchalantly is like, you're stronger than the Sorcerer Supreme. So that's what makes me think that there might be some kind of setup where she and or Doctor Strange has to like get a hold on her because she like loses her mind because her eyes turn red and stuff. Like the visual imagery that they're giving me for the Scarlet Witch is not a happy, flowery character.
It's like rage.
Yes, it's emotionally damaged rage. And at the very end, you hear her kids say, help me, mommy, or whatever, who, you know, she just like willed them into existence and they're supposed to be dead. So
well, hold on.
What is that about?
Because she said, thank you for choosing me to be your mom.
What, to the kids?
Yes. before like it went black and they like before like the thing closed in and everything was gone when she was putting them to sleep, she said, "Thank you for choosing me." That could go some places too, right? Like, who were they? Like, what is going on there?
She birthed them, though.
Well, yeah. Well, in a very sitcom way.
Well, sure.
There's different theories on that. Like, Mephisto soul, pieces of his souls is what created the kids. And them dying, going back. You know, Agnetha saying, "You don't know what you've done." Does that insinuate like, hey, now that everything's returned, all that, and you stole my powers, you've basically made Mephisto whole again, and that's going to be your problem?
See, I don't even know who that character is.
It's basically Satan.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's fine. What could go wrong?
I mean, that, I think, yeah, if I remember right, I think that's basically what you would say, the same level of Satan, I guess. But yeah.
If you are a huge Marvel fan and actually know what you're talking about, hit us up, hashtag Ask Diversion on Twitter, and tell us what we got wrong, because Adam, I think, out of the three of us is the most knowledgeable, but I mean, I don't think even you are, you know, hardcore Marvel comic OG.
I am not hardcore Marvel, but I do. What I know mostly from Marvel is from video games and cartoons versus the comics. But I think the one thing that I was surprised on out of the whole thing, my prediction was the dude who was leading S.W.O.R.D. was.
Yeah.
I thought he was a Skrull. That was my prediction, because they have a movie for the Skrull invasion, secret invasion. And I was thinking, okay, well, maybe this dude's a Skrull in disguise, but then a Skrull shows up at the very end, but it's not him.
Yeah, it was like an FBI agent. But see, that's what I'm confused about. Like, I know that I've heard of the secret invasion story arc and I have not read it. But like the Skrull are good. Like there's good, like, so we, you know, they're working with the Skrulls. So I don't understand.
Yeah. But I mean,
is there like a bad faction of Skrulls too?
Yeah. It's like everything, right? There's good and bad and every.
Okay. So, that kind of ties in, 'cause that was at the very end of the show. I almost said the movie, 'cause it's basically what it was. At the very end of it, the Skrull, which is, I guess, an FBI woman, she comes in and talks to Monica and says, "Oh, hey, we need your help. We need you to come with you." And she's like, "Where?" And she's like, "Up there." And, you know, yay, Monica gets to go into space, because they set that up in the beginning that she's not allowed to go into space. What I'm trying to figure out in my head, and maybe you can help me out with this, Adam, is, so Monica is the daughter of Captain Marvel's friend from the Air Force.
Correct.
In the Captain Marvel movie.
Rambo.
Yes, Monica Rambo. So her mother on the wall at the very like first episode, it shows her picture and it says like her like name is like Photon. I'm assuming that was some kind of character.
Photon is a character, yes, and that's who Monica turned into.
Oh, so that's who Monica turns into.
Yeah, basically, that's her character.
Okay. Okay. Because I was wondering about that, because they had the picture on the wall that I assumed was her mom, and it said Photon. And then Monica started getting powers from going into, what do they call it?
The Hex.
The Hex. Yeah, she went into the Hex. And so she started getting powers and stuff. So I was, yeah, okay, cool. So she's going to be Photon.
Yeah, and that's when she was talking about her, you know, basically you're going to go talk to this person. They're insinuating the guy that was from, actually, at the very end of Spider-Man, you watched that today. Did you watch that last scene where the Skrull showed up?
I did.
Him.
I did. Now, are we going to... Are we going to spoil this for Ryan?
Yeah, don't do that.
Well,
it's okay. No, go for it. Go for it. It's been out long enough. Go for it.
No, no, it's okay. Anybody that has seen it knows what we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, there's so much still to talk about then with WandaVision and its connections to that. But
see, there was some connections, but I really didn't see a whole lot because you and I watched that today. You'd already seen it. I hadn't seen it. And so I wanted to make sure before we talked about it today that, I had caught up to all the MCU movies, and that was the only one that I hadn't seen yet. And there were some like little tidbits that set some things up, but not really a whole lot, not more than most of the other like Marvel movies that started like just sprinkling in a little something here that's going to pay off like four years yeah. from now or something. Yeah. I know the connection that you're talking about, but there's only like maybe two.
He's got like
maybe
12
three.
In his mind.
Yeah. maybe three or
he's
four.
Like, actually,
but well, this
maybe
is,
we'll have to revisit this. But yeah,
it's more based on predicting where it's gonna go, just because the timeline, right? Just this WandaVision took place 2 to 4 weeks, I think, after the blip, and Spider-Man's like 8 months after the blip, and the things that happen in there, what they talk about, can insinuate either where these next Marvel series and movies are going to be, whether they're before or after what happens in Spider-Man. And my biggest thing is that I was kind of like, what the hell, was okay, they send the White Vision to fight and destroy the figment of imagination Vision, basically, and then they convince each other, and then he unlocks his mind and he's like, peace, see you later, and you don't even see him anymore.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I thought maybe they were going to merge and become Univision.
I don't think you could do that.
This is the different Vision. This is also in the comics. There is another Vision. So,
yeah, didn't you tell me his name was like Dark Vision or something?
I don't know if they consider him Dark Vision or White Vision. I think it actually was considered Dark Vision, and he's not exactly the same. If I remember right, because he doesn't have the Mind Stone, he's less on the human side. He's still very just robot, but now he has all the memories that was locked away. So almost, if I had to really put a pin on it, it's more like Ultron. You know, Ultron was very in his infancy and lacked humanity, and the Mind Stone is what made Vision more empathetic and remorseful towards humanity, because he felt pieces of those emotions, versus Ultron was very disconnected. So I feel like that's pretty much what Dark Vision is more on the Ultron side.
Yeah, I just Wikipedia'd up real quick, and there is a White Vision. There's also another section of Wikipedia called Vision Restored, but I'm not going to click on that one.
Oh, yeah. So it's White Vision. I knew it was another Vision yeah. set, but I thought there would have been a little bit more. And maybe with what it's next week or the week after, I think, is the Falcon and Winter Soldier. I wonder if he'll show in that. They don't show anything of that nature in the trailers, but of course. But I'm curious to know if he has an appearance at all.
Yeah, I would assume, just from looking at it, that's going to be a similar timeline, right? Like after everything, like that's my guess.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be simultaneous or if it's going to be after Spider-Man.
Right.
I think what they're going to do with that one is they're going to do every cop drama, like show from the 90s.
SVU.
You do like NYPD yeah. Blue, yeah. CSI.
Law and Order, all of them.
Law and Order, yeah. Special Victims Unit, all kinds of stuff. It's going
to
be great.
I think this one was described more of like, this was originally intended to be a movie, but then was spaced out to be episodic instead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, aren't these all? Like, WandaVision was a 9-hour movie.
Well, with the intent of like, look at how they did it. Every episode was a different phase. Like they had very intentional sets of it being episodic versus I think this one was originally supposed to be more of just a movie.
But I mean, WandaVision was actually shorter than that, though, because WandaVision's episodes are only like 25 minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so 4.5 hours. Yeah, I'm sure, like, maybe they originally intended this to be a movie, but they probably wrote it in such a way that it's going to feel like a TV show.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be solid. I'm curious to see where they go with it. I guess I just want to know what the timeline is on it. That will answer so much for me.
What stinks about these shows is Disney decides they're going to release everything on a Friday and we record on a Thursday. And so if we talk about these every week, we will still be a week behind.
Well, that is one of the things that I hated about WandaVision was if I got on YouTube or anything, there was things that were spoiled almost instantly because, you know, they were right on it first thing Friday morning, like, oh, here it is. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh yeah. I just stay out of those channels. But I do give props to Disney, and I think Apple does this as well, where they just drop like one episode every week instead of doing the binge thing where it's like, oh, here's everything, and then I have to feel pressured that I have to watch every single episode, or like you said, Adam, they're going to get spoiled and then I'm going to be mad.
I say I like that a few different streaming services are starting to go back to that like sequence of every week.
I think the binge thing can be nice at times, but I do really appreciate the episodes as well. Especially this one that had a lot of, well, what the hell's going on? You know, like I can't wait until next week, and you can conversate about it and you can, you know, go through all these different predictions, but I could appreciate it, but it did kill me at the same time. Cause like, I just want to know.
Yeah. So you think Agnes will be back, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. And that's why I was thinking it's Mephisto or something coming back, because she's going to need more data on that.
Yeah, like in my notes, I just wrote Agnes will return, Vision will return as predictions. So we'll see if those are right or not. But
yeah, I have a feeling at some level they're all going to return, especially if there's some kind of battle or something. Because like you said, with Agatha, she's going, you're stronger than, you know, Sorcerer Supreme. Like, that could be a cool backstory to show, like a prequel stuff, you know, or how they met and how she knows about him and that kind of thing, too. So at some level, I think she'll be back.
Yeah, Marvel, like, perfectly has captured how I used to play with my action figures when I was a kid. It's like you have this big battle and like, oh, somebody's dead. And then, like, the next time you play, be like, oh, no, I'm back. It's like they just capture that, like, storytelling that just grabs me so well.
No one's ever really dead in the universe, right? Like, they just come right back.
Tony Stark.
Don't.
Some bitch is dead.
No.
Why do you got to bring – you don't have to bring it up. Like,
he hates Tony Stark.
What?
I don't hate Tony Stark. I just got burned out of Tony Stark in his character. So I'm happy that they moved on with him.
So you're saying you're glad he's dead?
Yeah.
He'll be back.
I can appreciate him leaving out the way that he did, but I do miss his character. Although those scenes that were in Spider-Man really did touch my heart a little bit, though.
Not me. I have no heart.
I was just saying, you have to have one to have it touched, so...
Yeah, my heart's like an apricot pit, man. It's all hard and wrinkly.
Well, I did notice that in the trailers for Falcon and the Winter Soldier that it does look like the two start actually having a little bit of a conflict with the two of each other.
Yeah, there was a new trailer that dropped today, I think, that they're fighting over who's the next Captain America is going to be or something like that. I didn't watch it, but...
Those are the things like that do bother me about all these trailers that are coming out is I really like how the characters progressed and I don't like seeing the characters go back. A great example is Loki. Loki, I loved that he finally kind of grew up and was actually a brother to Thor there at the end when he died. And now they're coming out with this Loki series where, okay, well, forget everything because now it's back whenever the Tesseract was here. So he's going to go back to the bad guy again. And I don't really care to see it. And at the end of Endgame, I thought it was really cool that Falcon took the shield. It was like, and even Bucky.
That was one of the coolest things.
Yeah. And Bucky was even like, yeah, go ahead, dude. Like, here it is. So I hate to see that this is kind of like reverting. I don't know.
Well, Bucky's going to be like, dude, you were supposed to say, no, you take it. It was just a gesture. I like Bucky. Like, Winter Soldier is my favorite out of all those characters there.
I do wish he kept the long hair, though.
Yeah.
I liked him as kind of ragged, you know, the White Wolf. I thought that was interesting to see him start going that direction, but it, I don't know. That's my only complaint about any of it, is I wanted to see their characters still pick up where they left off, not kind of revert back.
I mean, you got to have some kind of conflict, right? Like,
but it's
so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the bad guys, right? Like, it's an ebb and flow. They die and then they come back. Their characters are resolved and then they have some kind of internal conflict. It has to go back and forth so they can keep making stuff, you know? Because Wanda, I mean, the same way, like Wanda was, oh, she was all good at the end of the movies and everything. Like, everything was fine. I mean, maybe not after Vision got killed, but, you know, she got her revenge. But during the buildup of the Thanos, you know, Infinity Gauntlet story arc, they introduced her. She was bad. She had all kinds of problems. And then she redeemed herself. And now we're back to, is Wanda lost her mind? Is she going crazy? Is she going to turn evil? So, you know, endless cycle.
Yeah, and maybe there's a good explanation of what happens between the two of them to kind of get that level. Because that's the only thing I would say is like, hey, they have a good reason. You know, you can relate a mentality issue there versus just two egos going head to head again. But maybe that is a good enough explanation. They're both, you know, soldiers.
Marvel hasn't let us down yet.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing is whenever we were halfway through WandaVision, that's what I kept saying to myself. I was like, damn it, Marvel did it again. They freaking pulled me back in. They're making this whole universe. I'm already predicting what's going to happen and wanting to know and already invested.
Just when I was out, they pulled me back in.
Well, I mean, if there's anything I'm disappointed on, really, is I don't want to see Thor go back to regular Thor. I like Lebowski Thor.
I love Lebowski Thor. He's the best.
I don't know. Yeah, he was, but he was so depressive.
but also kind of fun.
Yeah, they could have like made it to where, you know, he's mended his mind and, you know, just didn't get himself fit and just goofy.
Yeah. I liked his crew that he hung out with.
Oh, what was that guy's name?
The Rock guy, yeah, or whatever.
I love the actor who voiced the one guy. He's so funny. From Flight of the Conchords and stuff, I think.
Oh, Wakiti or Takiti, the guy who actually directed Ragnarok?
Yes.
Yeah. Was that him?
Yeah, the guy who directed Ragnarok is the guy. Yeah, Taika. He plays that character.
Okay, so it's a different guy. But yeah, I like him too.
Yeah, I think the thing I always got on was just that whole simplicity. Like, hey, man.
Hey, hey, man, when they're playing Xbox. That's so great, dude. It's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to butcher his name. Taika Waititi.
Yeah, Taika Waititi.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
That guy. Yeah, he's funny. He's hilarious.
Oh, he's great.
But, I mean, I'll actually say, out of all the Marvel movies, the one I enjoyed the most, just as a fun watch, is Ragnarok.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. And I loved
it. It was like a buddy comedy with Thor and the Hulk.
Yep. Well, I loved it too, like the music, right? Like the what's the song? Like it's about Thor. And so like it was like the whole like driving force behind that movie. And it's just like, this is so good. Like they just, and it was a beautifully well done movie too. Like cinematically was great. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, I thought the comedy for that movie was so on point. And it was a little sad to see that stuff disappear real quick whenever they're going back into Infinity War. But I mean, it made sense, but it just kind of, it's like, man, I just really enjoyed Thor that way.
Yeah. I'm excited for a new Doctor Strange movie. Doctor Strange is kind of like one of my favorite characters just because he's so different from the rest of them. So
yeah, he's like the Paul Bettany to me. He needs more time.
Yeah, I wish Scott Derrickson was doing the directing, though. Like, I do love how they're switching up directors on a lot of these. But Derrickson just did such a good job with Doctor Strange and, like, just his style. Bringing his style of directing to that character was really good. And I'm sure the new director, I'm not sure who it is, will do just a fantastic job because everyone has, like we're saying, right? Like, they've been able to have the quality even with changing up, like who's directing, you know, who's the producers, like all that kind of stuff. The quality is so high.
Yeah. I'm curious to know if Dimamaru, I think that's how you say his name, if he's coming back or not.
Who's that?
He's like the main baddie for Doctor Strange. He was in the first Doctor Strange movie that, they were trying to stop, that he put him in the time cycle.
Oh yeah. What's that? Yes.
The actor. It's Dimamaru or something like that. Was the name of the villain. But
yeah.
And I like that Mads was the main dude on the physical side. So that kind of sucks that he's gone. But I wonder if Dimamaru will come back because he is such a powerful being, especially if they start doing these multiverses, how that's gonna work.
Who played that character? I don't even see that.
I don't know on that one. I don't know who played him, but There's
Dr. Nicodemus West, Lucian, Strong Zealot, Tall Zealot, Hamir, Sol Rama, Tina Minoru, Daniel Drum. I don't remember who the bad guy was in that movie. Was it Mord? Was it Chiwetel Ejiofor? Mordo?
Chiwetel?
Yeah. I don't know.
Hang on.
Oh, wait a second. Dimamaru Benedict did the actual audio for that.
Oh, he did? He did both of them?
Yeah, he did the motion capture and voice for the character.
That's interesting.
That is really interesting.
Mads Mikkelsen was the bad guy in that movie.
No, he was the zealot, basically, to
Dimamaru.
Oh, Baron Mordo is who you're thinking of, and that is, how'd you say his name, Ron? Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Chiwetel Ejiofor. Ejiofor, something like that. Another good actor. Great act. Like, the quality of acting in these movies is just insane.
Oh, wait. So did I miss that? Is Dimamaru not the main bad guy of that movie? Was he not?
His name is Baron Mordo.
No, Dormammu, or however you say it, makes an appearance. He does show up.
Dormammu, yeah.
Yeah,
he does show up. End. Right, exactly. But yeah, he's just... I got, apparently Benedict does the voice and everything.
Yeah, he's not even listed as a he's not even listed on the cast as a character.
Yeah.
On IMDb.
Well, that's the guy I'm wondering if he's going to come back because he is an extremely powerful being and he is normally the one that's kind of the pain in the ass for like the Avengers to deal with.
He looks like Groot.
Yeah, like a really space Groot.
Very large space Groot.
Yeah, that's got to be the if they do like a multiverse type thing, he's got to be the eventual bad guy because he's a primordial interdimensional entity who wields apocalyptic levels of supernatural power and is ruler of the dark dimension. So,
and that's the next movie is Doctor Strange
Thanos 2.0. Yeah.
It's Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. So I would assume he's coming in that one.
It's that or Galactus. It's one of the two.
Galactus is too busy in Fortnite. So, yeah, I mean, we started with WandaVision and kind of went off the rails to the entire MCU.
As tends to happen.
Yeah, any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Bacon.
Same.
All right. So that does it for this week. Say goodbye, everybody.
See you all next week.
See you later.
Diversion will return. Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.